You are now listening to the Back Look Cinema Podcast with Zach and Zoe. Thank you for joining us as we talk about the movies of yesteryear. You can reach us on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter by searching for Back Look Cinema. Check our show notes for more info, and now, let's get it in.
This is Zach.
And this is Zoe, and thank you for joining us at the Back Look Cinema Podcast with Zach and Zoe. It's great to have you with us today. Thank you, fam, for joining us once again on this fabulous adventure that we're on. And this is the 11th episode. And as you know, the reason we started this show is to strengthen our bond. And along with that, we also tried out a game of Mortal Kombat. As you know, last episode, my son challenged me to Mortal Kombat, which I claimed that I was awesome at. And earlier today, he proceeded to beat the brakes off of me, no matter who I try. But that's all right. I'm a little bit out of practice. I haven't played in a while. And I didn't use my... I didn't have the directions right in front of me on how to do the character moves or the combos. I've forgotten all of the combos and stuff. So, yeah. And he claims that he didn't practice too much. But the way he played, it was like he practiced... He viciously practiced.
Not even, no. It was only one day I played the game, and that was it.
Okay, well, that's the story. We'll go with that for right now. So, why don't you tell them about our merch?
So, yeah, you can get t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, face masks, and a bunch of other items at our website, backlookcinema.com.
And also at backlookcinema.com, you can leave us a direct feedback, comment, suggestions, etc.
And please, if you like our show, then rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app that you might be using.
That's awesome. So what you been up to?
Nothing really. Just been watching some YouTube videos.
And beating me at Mortal Kombat. And apparently practicing a lot.
No, only for a day for like 25 minutes. And that was it.
So I know that you're watching video game YouTubes and show YouTubes, wrestling YouTubes. Is that about it?
Yeah, that's just about it. Mm.
So is that your main source of entertainment now?
Yes.
Yeah, mine too, actually. It has almost replaced television, and I'm finding new stuff all the time. It's a great source for learning. Like when I recorded those sessions... on a PlayStation, I learned how to do that watching a YouTube video.
You could have asked me and I could have told you how.
Oh yeah, no, I was on the road. I was like, maybe I should record when us playing Mortal Kombat and then put it on a Twitch channel. And then I was like, maybe I should look that up. Like all those wonderful meals that I cook, like the Christmas lasagna, I learned that from watching a YouTube video. I watched a couple of lasagna YouTube videos. Most of the stuff that I've made, I've watched the video because it's like I'll go to like a written recipe. One of my favorite sites is Food Network, but a lot of times, you know, just reading about how to make something is not enough. When you see how people do it, you get the technique down, and then you got a better understanding of what you're supposed to do.
Or at least what you're trying to do.
Right. So, so what was the show that we watched?
The movie we watched is called House.
House is a movie from my childhood. We watched this movie as a suggestion from my brother, your uncle, Vernon Richardson. He was like, how about House? And I was like, House, that is an excellent idea. I don't know if it aged well, but I know I watched this show a bunch of times on HBO. We watched this movie a lot. And I have fond memories of watching this. It's described as a horror comedy. So it has some funny moments on it. It wasn't really scary at all. What would you say?
Yeah, I agree. It's not really that scary.
No. They tried to do the jump scares. And I was more thrilled than scared when I watched this movie. I think one of the reasons is that the makeup is abysmal. It's almost like you're watching The Muppets.
There are sometimes I expected a jump scare. There were so many jump scares I expected.
Right, right. Well, this is the 80s. So 80s, that was the main way you would you scare somebody is with jump scares. You know, like with Friday the 13th or with, the Nightmare on Elm Street, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. They was like, oh, jump scares. Either jump scares or gore. It was one of the two. That was the formula. I didn't watch too many horror movies. I'm not a horror movie aficionado. I would see it, something like Friday the 13th. It's like, well, I wash my hands of this. I'm done with this genre of movies. I don't need to watch any of this no more. So, how'd you like this movie?
It was good, even though at first it was a slow pace overall. It was still good.
Yeah, it was slow pace because they really wanted to, start off with a serious tone. It's very similar in tone to a lot of other horror movies of that day, and you'll see why when I start getting into this. So, the description is how they describe the movie. Roger Cobb is a Vietnam vet whose career as a horror novelist has taken a turn for the worse when his son Jimmy mysteriously disappears while visiting his aunt's house. The sudden death of his aunt brings Roger back to the house where his nightmares began. That was written by Arthur de Boon. It was released in February 28, 1986 by New World Pictures. It grossed over $19.4 million and it had a $3 million budget. It had generally middling reviews, as you would expect for this sort of film. It was like, when you look at this film, it's like, yeah, it's sort of in the middle.
Yeah, it is.
So, let's see. It starred William Catt as Roger Cobb. I don't suppose you recognize I do.
No.
So he was the actor on The Greatest American Hero, and he had a couple of episodes on Heroes that came out in the early 2000s. Now, The Greatest American Hero is like one of the shows I grew up on.
Oh, yeah, I already know because I've seen a logo in your room somewhere.
Right, right. And I had it on the website or whatever. So that show was basically about a man who, he's a school teacher. He has an encounter with some aliens. The aliens give him a super suit. It's literally a superhero suit. It's a red suit with a black cape. And he has an instruction booklet so that he knows how to use the suit. One of the properties of the suit is that when you have the suit on, you can read the instruction booklet. That's like his first power, is to be able to read different languages. But he loses the instruction booklet, so now he does not know how to use the suit. The suit allows him to fly, but he has to figure out how to fly on his own. The suit allows him to see through walls, but he has to figure that out. He has a lot of powers that, like, say, like Superman would have. And then as the series progresses, he finds out more about how to use the suit. He finds out how to get psychic impressions off of objects, how to turn invisible, things of that nature. And it's just amusing in its originality in that you have a superhero that does not know how to use the superpowers.
If I'm not mistaken, his name is The Greatest American Hero or something like that.
The name of the show was The Greatest American Hero. He, as a hero, did not have a name. Like, he didn't have an alter ego. He was just a school teacher. And whenever there was some crime happening, or espionage or whatever, he would get together with his FBI agent and he would put on the suit and go fight crime. And that was the gist of the show. It also starred George Wendt. He played Harold Gordon, or Gordon. That might be a typo. It's probably Gordon. And I don't know if you recognize that guy.
No.
So he was on a sitcom called Cheers. He played one of the patrons of Cheers. His name was Norm, and this thing was every time he walked into the bar, everybody would say Norm.
You know what, Family Guy, that's all I can say. Family Guy, you brought up two things, America's Greatest Hero and Cheers.
Right.
So, Family Guy, that's all I can say.
So that there's your familiarity with George Wendt. Also starred Richard Mull as Big Ben. Us old school people, recognize him from the show Night Court, where he played a very tall bailiff. And also was Kay Lenz. She played his wife, Cindy Sinclair. No, wait a minute. Yeah, I guess so. I guess that is her. Mary Staven played Tanya. And Stephen Williams, I have his name. He's like way low in the credits. And then his partner, I should have got his name because I recognize both of them. But Stephen Williams especially, he played cop number two. He was a black police officer. I recognized him from the show 21 Jump Street. And man, I loved that show growing up. I watched almost every episode of the first like four seasons, and then it kind of fell off for me. But that was an awesome show.
That was a movie, not a TV show.
It was a movie based on the TV show.
I wouldn't know because I never watched it.
And the movie is a straight up comedy. That was the trip about it. The movie is a whole ass comedy, but the show was like a serious show. So you already know the premise of 21 Jump Street. Adult cops pretend to be high school students and infiltrate the high school to find crime. So that was in 21 Jump Street. We just loved that show. I couldn't get enough of it. So that's why I have Stephen Williams' name on here, credit on here. I know he's on a couple other shows. He's basically a character actor that plays police officers or some type of authority figure, but almost always a policeman. I've never seen him play a politician or a soldier or a teacher or anything like that. He's always a cop of some sort. So this movie was directed by Steve Miner. And Steve Miner, he's all about the horror. He directed Friday the 13th, Part 2 and Part 3. He directed Soul Man, which is not a horror movie. It's a comedy. It's a very aged comedy. Let's say it would age very poorly. Soul Man was about a white dude who takes some pills and basically goes in blackface and experiences life as a black person.
Yeah, yeah, that can definitely age poorly. That's heavily aged poorly.
Yeah, that would not. And it's like in the '80s, we had no problem with that whatsoever. Or maybe I was too young to hear any of the protests, but I didn't hear anybody protesting this movie or getting mad about it. It's like this dude is in the movie, essentially the entire movie in blackface. And nobody cared. And it wasn't even... I thought it was an interesting movie. I thought it made a few decent points because the only way you can experience life as a minority in this country is if you are a minority. And that was basically the premise of the film. But the problem is that the reason that he took these advanced tanning pills and turned himself black was so that he could take advantage of a scholarship that reserved for African Americans.
Hell yeah. Having age poorly.
Right. So he got all the consequences of that. He did this movie called Warlock, which is a horror movie similar to something like Hellraiser or anything. Like, it was a devil movie. It was anytime you have a movie with like Warlock and angels and devils, it's a devil movie, and that's what Warlock was. Lake Placid, which I don't remember if I seen this movie or not, but one of the things I liked about it is it's about a killer alligator. So you had Jaws, it's about a killer shark. You had Cujo, about a killer dog. Lake Placid was about a killer. You don't know about Cujo?
No, and we're not watching it. No.
Oh no, I never watched Cujo. We're not watching it. Cujo was one of those movies I would have been terrified to watch, and so I never got around to watching it.
Let me guess, it was made by Stephen King.
Yes, it's based off of Stephen King book, and it's actually one of the better movies. Like, a lot of Stephen King movies didn't really come out that well, but Cujo apparently came out very well, and it's not really a horror movie. It's about an evil dog, and he's not possessed by the devil. He just wants to bite and eat humans. It's just... And so it's
about... That reminds me of the so-called Mr. Pickles.
I don't know who Mr. Pickles is.
Yeah, you don't need to know about it. Oh, okay. It's an adult swim, so don't worry about it.
Oh, okay. All right. So anyway, so Lake Placid, like I say, is about killer alligator. So the alligator is, he's going around chomping, you know, basically chomping people, and the people are trying to figure out a way to deal with the alligator, to kill it or whatever. And there's a shot of this old lady, right, at the lake. And I guess they're asking, like, what's her deal? And she was like, oh, me? I'm rooting for the alligator.
wow, just have no faith at all.
Right. So also, he did a bunch of episodes of The Wonder Years and Dawson's Creek. So he's been busy. So this movie was written by Fred Decker and a screenplay. Goodness gracious, I can talk. I know words. Screenplay by Ethan Wiley. So I don't know too much about Ethan Wiley, but Fred Decker, he's directed Godzilla 1985, also known as Godzilla King of the Monsters 3D. No, he didn't write. He didn't direct these. He's written these. Either he's written them or he's kind of rewritten them, because I'm pretty sure he didn't write the original Godzilla 1985. I'm pretty sure that he rewrote it for U.S. audiences, because it was originally a Japanese movie.
I was going to say, I think you meant like he rewritten.
Yeah, he must have. Well, that's how they wrote on IMDb, which is where we get all of our information from on this podcast. IMDb had put that as like he was a writer, but I don't think he wrote it, because that is a Japanese movie. But also known as Godzilla King of Monsters 3D. He also wrote Ricochet, which is actually a pretty good movie, and The Predator. So not the old Predator, like that movie that came out a couple years ago, The Predator, which was just okay. It had music by Harry Manfredini, or Harry Manfredetti, something like that.
Fredini. I'll go with Fredini. Yeah, Fredini. That sounds much better.
Fredini. Manfredini. Anyways, he did the music for all of the Friday the 13th movies. So all of you horror people ought to know who this man is. Every time they have Friday the 13th, they have to put a name on it, because they have to have Jason's signature theme. And so
it is heavily needed for that man.
Right. So because when I was looking up the credit, like every time you see Friday the 13th, his name is attached to it. Just like in almost all Star Wars movies, John Williams' name is on there, because even if he didn't actually compose the music, that following musicians will use elements of his music in their composition. So his name is almost always going to be attached to Star Wars. So also you have, he did the music for Swamp Thing, and he did a whole bunch of music, but those were the two things that he did of note. It was produced by Sean S. Cunningham and Roger Corman, who went uncredited on this movie. And the reason that it was Roger Corman is given producer credit is because New World Pictures is a production company that he created. And people in old school know that Roger Corman, he was like the king of, how do I put this? He was the king of lame horror movies, or just lame movies in general. His movies were campy and corny. I think he was a guy. Have you heard about the Fantastic Four movie that he made that was never released? I'm pretty sure he was the one that made it.
I haven't heard about it, but go on.
So, I forgot. Some studio, they had the rights to Fantastic Four. So Marvel was about to snatch the rights back. And this is like a long time ago. But they wanted to make the movie so they can maintain the rights, because apparently the way the agreement goes, that if they make a movie in a certain amount of times, they can retain the rights. So they had to hurry up and make a movie, and they didn't care what it looked like. And so so if you look it up later on, you'll see what these characters look like.
I think I have seen clips of it where it looks so weird and awful. Oh, it's like, why does Dr. Doom look like that? Dr. Doom, you don't look good at all.
No, it's not the one with the are you talking about the one that just came out recently with the
four?
No, no. It's something older than that, right?
Yeah, something very older. And then I was like, Dr. Doom does not look right. I understand this film is old, but it doesn't look like it's an official.
No, well, it is technically an official release, but they never released it in theaters. The actors thought that, and they never intended to. They just made it as part of the contractual obligation so they can maintain the rights. Sort of how sometimes music artists, they'll put out a trash album just so that they can fulfill their contracts to hurry up and get out of the studio deal. So this is kind of like the same thing. So they gave it to Roger Corman, and Roger Corman just threw some stuff together off of like a budget of almost $0. The actors thought they were doing a serious film. They thought they was doing a serious movie that's going to get actually released in theaters, and it wasn't. And the actors were very disappointed in that. So,
I would too. I would be disappointed.
Right. So we just finished talking about the producers.
So now we're going to go to commercial break. It's going to be a short one. And we'll be right back to talk about our favorite parts of the movie, some movie trivia, and find out what some critics think of it.
Awesome. We'll be right back.
Hey, do you want that pep in your step? That pump in your jump? Do you want that knowledge like you graduated from college with an advanced degree in economics? Do you want that steely stare with the eyes of a bear? Do you have the eyes of a hawk? Do you think you can talk that talk? Can you hear their gossip with the ears of a wolf? Do you find the need to leave your peers engulfed? To nosebleed the creedless with the speed of the puma, we welcome you to take advantage of the ultimate Zuma. Disarray, carnage, doom, and chance. That can't be all there is to life, can it? Ignite your insight and fan it. Read the Daily Planet.
And we're back. Thank you for joining us. So, Zachary, what was your favorite parts of the movie?
Let's see. I want to say that my favorite parts would be when he starts to hear things. He wants to type his story. He wants to basically put his experience of what he witnessed in the Vietnam War, but he can't do it because he's getting distracted every single time. What was, I believe, the first time is like he goes upstairs, he hears something. So he's like, let me go check. He goes in, sees nothing in the first room, check the other room, sees nothing. Goes into his aunt's room and then basically see his aunt telling him, you know, yeah, I was right, the house is haunted. And it got to me. And it's going to get to you because it knows you. Then proceed to hang yourself. I'm like, wow, okay, Well, at least your aunt told you what's up and, you know, what's it going to do. Then he's like, huh. I feel like snooping a little bit more. Goes towards the closet, opens it, closes it, nothing's there. Then he hears the clock strikes 12, opens it again. Monster comes out and starts attacking. I'm like, wow, why did I see that one coming? Second part is when the fist comes alive. Again, he's trying to type write a story. The fist comes alive. It's a sword fist on the wall, comes alive. Starts moving, and he's trying to kill it with, like, a trophy. He's like, no, that's not going to work. So he's like, all right, I'm going to be right back. Leaves, goes to the shed, looks, he finds a pistol. He's like, okay, I got a pistol. I think it was a revolver, but there was no bullets. He was like, okay, forget that. He was like, I know there's bullets around here somewhere. Finds the bullets for a shotgun, grabs it, shoot the sword fist. That was done. Then he hears knocks on the door, goes towards the door, opens it. Now, it's basically his ex at the door. He's like, what are you doing here? I don't understand. Why are you here? And the moment he goes to put the gun down, it changes into a hideous monster. He shoots it. And then that's when his name's like, oh, my God, I hear a gunshot. Let me call 911. Like, yeah, hello. I'd like to report, you know, someone basically offing themselves. And then that, because that's what he thinks, because all he hears is gunshots. Roger over here, he's like, oh no, I just shot my wife, because apparently the monster was his wife, his ex, basically. And then he hears sirens, so he knows he has to pick up the body and hide it. After he hides it, he tries to calmly act like he's cleaning the shotgun. The officer goes to my, what's your name? My name is Roger. Like, wait, you're the Rogers, the one that writes these books? Like, yeah, why didn't you say so? Forgets about the citations, you know. And he's like, hey, other officers, go ahead, go back. We got this. Don't worry about it. And he ain't no harm. And it was like, so you know that's not right for you to fire a gun in the city, within the city. It was like, oh, yeah, you know, I didn't know it was loaded. Yeah, that's a pretty good lie to use. So the officer asked him, hey, can I use a bathroom? He's like, no, 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 you can't. No, yes, you can. Go ahead, go in. They go in the house. Next thing, that's when his neighbor pops right back up. And I'm like, why is he here? Why did you come up? Why are you snooping? You are the worst neighbor. I understand your characteristics, but you're the worst neighbor there. Goes inside the house. The officer goes to the bathroom. He takes the other officer into the kitchen to give him some coffee. Now, the officer noticed that he's shaking. He's like, obviously, like, nervous. He's shooken up. As he goes to pick up the spoon that he dropped, he noticed that there's two shotgun shells that are on the floor. As he goes pick it up, his neighbor responds like, no, 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 I got it. Let me help you. And I'm like, dude, stop. He's trying to not to seem like he's an insane maniac, because to any other person that's living, that's not in a haunted house, they're going to see a different person who's in a haunted house as an insane person. Like, this dude is insane. This man is making things up out of his mind. The officer grabs the two shotgun, you know, the ammo, gets up, walks away. Now, Roz is like, where's my gun? And I was like, then the officer was like, what do you mean? It's like, oh, no, never mind. Everyone else leaves the house. Roz goes check on the body that he, you know, put away in, like, this little closet. He doesn't see the body. He hears noises. He goes upstairs. He grabs, like, this hook or whatever. Again, he's going upstairs looking for this thing. The thing is right behind him and is ready to knock him out. Before he's opened up that closet door that he opened up before, he gets knocked down with the butt of the shotgun. The thing aims it at his head. Pulls the trigger, nothing happened because he used up all his ammo along with all the other ammo being dropped. So he has to fight fights this creature that looks like a disgusting, hideous version of his ex-wife. Fights it off, and before the thing dies, he goes towards the bathroom where, for some reason, I forgot, because I did skip this part over, that there was these floating objects that came after him in the shed. It was a hedge, what was it, a head scissors, a shovel, and an axe. Try to kill him because, you know, it was a haunted house. And he left it trapped in the bathroom. He goes to the bathroom door, opens it up, move out the way, so the object ends up hitting the monster. And I was like, well, you know what? Pretty clever. So then he goes, grab a plastic bag or a trash bag, push the head in, goes outside, buries the head. Then he's like, okay, now I got to get the body. As soon when the moment he brings the body out, about to bury it, this lady, a different neighbor, comes up, tell him, hey, you look all nice and good. You know, you look like a nice, good working man. You tell him, I can tell when someone wants to play around and work. Yeah, I can tell.
Give me out where was this neighbor when he encounters her?
I think she was in the pool.
She was in his pool.
Yeah, in his pool. And I was like, first of all, that's his pool. What are you doing? Do these neighbors not have any restrictions on boundaries?
These neighbors have no boundaries. You got Joe, what's his name? I forgot his name already, but the character, the guy played by George Wendt. What was it?
Harold,
name?
I believe. Yeah, Harold.
Harold is popping up any old time in his house, all the way up in his house, just popping up.
Oh, yeah, no, the first time he's encountered him, this man is like, oh, yeah, you know, the neighbor, last neighbor here, crazy, out of his mind, this complete maniac. I was like, but that's my, that's my aunt. Very nice, sweet old lady, if I might add you. And he's like, wait, who are you? I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm Rogers. You're the Rogers? The one that graduated? Who? I'm like, what is with these people? Like, I know they're famous, but can you give them space? Jeez.
No, they've got no boundary, especially George. George don't know what a boundary is.
I want to have solitude. Solitude? Solitude. You know, being alone, solitude. Yeah, solitude. I know what that is. No, you don't.
So, yeah, Harold, he meets Harold, that's when he first met him, when he first bought the house. And then after he encounters a monster that first time that was in a closet, he sets up all these cameras and recording devices to capture the moment the monster is supposed to rush out the closet. He wants to capture a photo of this monster, so he has all these cameras set up. He has a string attached to the doorknob. He's going to yank the screen. And then I presume the cameras will automatically flash or already recording as the door opens. And then he's supposed to run out of the house. That was his plan. But so he's setting up the cameras. And next thing you know, George just pops in his room. So George went into his house, walked all the way upstairs, and walked into that particular room talking about, you want to eat a snack? I was like, what is wrong with this?
No. It was the first time he sets it up, he pulls the string, runs out the house, and then, you know, he slides on the ground, and then Harold's there with his dog, just looking at this man like,
walking his dog on his lawn.
This man's insane. Why is he jumping out? Why did he jump out the house like that? Tell me, hey, neighbor, how are you? It's like, oh, yeah, I'm fine. You know, gotta... Yeah, come on, you gotta get back to solitude? Solitude. Gotta get back to solitude. Goes right back in the house. I'm like, yeah, any person would see this as an insane man just living in this big house.
Right, he thinks I'm pretty sure Harold thinks at this time is that this man is as crazy as his aunt was.
I mean, I would too. But yeah, back to him burying the body that's in the trash bag. He wants to bury it, couldn't do it because he's talking to this lady neighbor that came out of his pool, by the way. And now, as they're talking, the body arms comes out.
Comes out of a garbage bag.
Yeah, it comes out the garbage bag and starts moving around. So he steps on it, continues to talk, trying to act awkward. Then he moves his feet away. The hand then moves towards the lady, and then he has to step closer to her. And I'm like, this thing does not want to give up.
Right, right, right.
After she leaves, telling her, oh yeah, I'll be back around later. She goes off. He starts hitting the bag. And he's like, you stupid piece of, he's just hitting it. She turns around. He quickly stops, so they can talk a little bit more. She then goes off. And then he gets he notices the axe. He gets it. He's like, I got a clever idea. Chops up the body and then just buried it all over the yard.
Right.
Then he goes, I forgot where he went. He went somewhere else. And then it's like, it's night. He comes right back. There is a dog digging in his yard, getting a hand that he buried. And he's like, well, you got to be kidding me. I buried that for a reason. First of all, you're the same dog that went in my trash can the other day. Why are you here?
He has the same boundary issues as everybody else in that neighborhood.
I'm like, dog, like, why are you here in this particular, this house? Why this house? There's a bunch of other houses you can dig in. Why mine? So then he tries to get the dog, but he couldn't because the dog runs away with the hand. So then he tries to chase the dog. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to get in the car. He's like, I don't even have the keys to this car. So he has to go back in the house, look for the keys. Next, he hears a knock at the door. He goes to it. It's the same lady that was in his pool dropping off her son to babysit. And I'm like, what? What? You didn't even ask them.
And she don't even know who this dude is.
I'm like, you don't. Like, she just drop her. Come, drops off the baby.
And drops off her baby to a total stranger.
And then he noticed that the hand is attached to that baby. And I'm like, why do I have the feeling that that dog belongs to this lady or someone? Because that hand is on that little boy. Okay, yeah, that's a little bit weird, but whatever, sure. So then, after he notices a hand is on the little boy, he has to chase the little boy, grab the hand off, but the hand is hurting the child. So he's like, how can I yank this off without hurting the child? So he's like, I got an idea. I'm going to bite the hand. He bites the hand. The hand lets go. Then he throws it down the toilet and flushes it. And then he's like, yeah, he just had to use the bathroom. He's all right. And then right. She's like, yeah, okay. So I'll be back around, later on tonight. And he's like, yeah, sure, fine, whatever.
Did you notice the toys that the little boy had?
I saw a Skeletor.
Right, yeah, Skeletor, like, and he had Buzzsaw. Because Master of the Universe was big in those days.
And, so he goes back to the computer. Now, the swordfish is covered up because he had shot it. So, no one wants to see a swordfish got shot. And he's typing up his story. He's going to back into his flashback as he's typing. And then he comes out of it. And as he comes out of it, he's like, oh, no, that little child's missing. Where did he go? He has to go look for the boy. He notices that the little boy is with this weird-looking thing going into a room. So he goes into the room, notices the boy is sitting inside the chimney and gets pulled into the chimney. So he goes, rushes in, grabs the boy's leg, and trying to pull the boy back as these two, now it's two of them and not one because, that's how it works.
Yeah, they look like trolls.
Yeah, it looked like
trolls.
Trying to pull the child up the chimney as he's pulling down. And I'm like, yeah, that's a real good struggle trying to pull down.
Yeah, that's it. I guess that's a strong kid. You'd think that all that, all those forces applied to his little body.
Oh, yeah, just be screaming in pain. But no, he's there laughing. I'm like,
he's laughing. He's having a grand old time.
And it's like, it's either A, these things aren't pulling that hard, or B, is this that this kid has supernatural powers of not being harmed.
I think he was just having too much fun.
And, after he gets the child back, he gives the child a bath. Then the mother comes back. It's like, oh, yeah, he had a good... Like, yeah, he had a fun time. Yeah, he had a grand old time. Takes the baby, then she leaves. And he's like, what am I going to do? What can I do? Because this house is breaking me. It's hurting me, and it's irritating. And if I remember... That's when his neighbor comes back around. Harold comes back around again. He's like, Harold, I'm going to need your help. So I have a raccoon. It's like this giant raccoon.
Now here's what's funny, right? So before, earlier in the movie, he tells Harold that he's seeing ghosts. And Harold obviously doesn't believe him. He was like, no offense, Roger, but your aunt was Looney Tunes. And then he's like, well, Harold, do you think I'm Looney Tunes?
Oh, you're talking about, yeah, your aunt's Looney Tunes. Like, you think I'm Looney Tunes?
He's like, no, you're not Looney Tunes. But you can tell he thinks he's Looney Tunes.
Oh, yeah. He's trying to calmly eat his food. That's when he comes over, talking about, I saw a monster, and it grabbed me. He grabs Harold's hand as he's trying to eat a piece of sausage, and he's getting scared. He's like, you know, I'm gonna go, you know.
Right.
I'll see you later. He's like, oh, yeah, thanks for the meal. He's like, yeah, no problem. I'm like,
that's the first time Harold excused himself from the house because he's always barging in. But then, in the part that you're talking about just now, he tells Harold, oh, it wasn't ghosts, it was a raccoon.
Yeah, it was a raccoon. It's a giant raccoon the size of Wyoming. And I'm like, that's one big raccoon then. Tell me, well, here's the deal. I'm going to give you this gun. It's a harpoon gun. Now, when you see this thing, I'm going to just shoot it between the eyes. Now, just in case, it might try to escape and go up through the roof because they made a big hole up there. I'm like, uh-huh. Yeah, that shit is believable. And it comes down here, you know, to nest, to feed, whatever. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to open up the door, and I'm going to use this pillow. No, he has a mattress as a shield, and he's going to use it. And he's like, now, when the clock strikes 12, I'm going to open up the door. The moment it strikes 12, he opens up the door. And yeah, the monster dude comes out, and it does start attacking him. And he's like, hell, shoot, do it. He does shoot. But the thing is, it hits the thing in a shoulder or whatever. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, but the funny thing is that tell him, shoot him again. He was like, it's got a lot
shoot
of
him again.
To it.
Tell him how.
Right, because the harpoon itself, it had a line attached to it. And the idea was to, string up the creature. I think that was his plan. He had a line attached to the harpoon. So he can't shoot the harpoon twice because it's got a line attached to it. He can't reload or anything because it's attached to a line.
Yeah. And like after the monster gets shot, the monster leaves through the closet. He turns around like, hell, what's wrong with you? Now, he steps on part of the line that ends up getting him caught with the monster retreating. So he's getting dragged. And then he's like, hell, help me. Talking about, hell, grab hold of me. Hell goes, grab him. Talking about, come on, I got you. I won't let go. Let's, you know, finger slips away. I'm like, yeah, that happened.
Right.
Getting dragged, and he ends up in this jungle, which is, we're going to say the jungle is Vietnam because that's where he's getting his flashbacks from. And that's when he sees his, one of his friends, Ben, who basically got shot by a bunch of Vietnams, and he's like, okay, I'm going to need you to kill, just do it. I'm going to need you to do it because I don't want to be caught. He doesn't do it. He's like, yeah, I'll be back. I'll get help.
So what he was talking about is that, so Big Ben gets, I guess, in the actual past in Vietnam, Ben is ambushed and killed by Vietnamese. So what's his name? The writer.
Roger.
Roger finds Big Ben. And Big Ben begs Roger to kill him because he's in so much pain. He's been shot up. He doesn't want to be taken by the enemy. But, you know, asking somebody to kill you is pretty rough. And then expecting that dude to kill you is even rougher. So Roger did not have the heart to kill his friend.
He was like, I'll be right back. I'll get help. I promise. He leaves. Then the Vietnams come, picks up Ben. He was like, Roger, you son of a gun, I'll get you. I'll get my revenge on you, you coward.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, that works. That makes sense.
Right.
So he leads through this white door that leads him out the closet.
Right. The Vietnamese, they notice him, and then they start shooting at him. And so he runs. He sees the white, is actually a white rectangle that he realizes the door back to his world. So he runs. He dives through the door, gets back in his world, and he sees Harold asleep on the mattress.
No, here's the worst part. If you notice, when he does come in the room, he has a case of beer. But then when you look at what he's drinking, I'm like, where did you get my liquor from? Why were you in? First of all, why did you leave this room to go in my kitchen to grab a bottle of liquor and drink it to pour your sorrows out? Why? That's my liquor. That's meant for me.
Right. Even worse, it probably wasn't even his. If He might have gone back all the way to his house.
Probably, who knows?
And got his own liquor.
When Roger goes to, you know, wake him up, Harold just starts hitting him on the head with some object. And I'm like, wow. He's like, it's me. It's me, Roger.
Right. When he wakes up, he's startled, and he just starts swinging his... the harpoon did, or no, it wasn't a harpoon.
It was some object.
I think it was a poker. Because I think Roger had a poker, and he was trying to fight the monster off with a fireplace poker when the monster first came through the door. And so Harold is sitting there. He's asleep. And Roger comes flying through the door. He basically lands on Harold and wakes up Harold. Harold is startled. He starts swinging the poker. He's like, wait, Harold, it's me.
So then he takes Harold into like another room so he could, because he's already done for. He's tired. He's asleep. So he puts him in there. So then that's when Roger goes back to the set. And now before that, in the movie, like in the beginning of the movie, he's talking to a real tailor. And he tells him that, oh, yeah, your aunt's a really good artist, yeah. See, he was making his painting, you know, but she didn't finish it. I guess, you know, before she killed us, she passed away in her room. And I'm like, why don't, he already knows, there's no point. And then he noticed a painting that, in the painting, you see the clock. You see the closet door. And then next to that, there's a blanket, whatever, a little napkin, whatever, handkerchief.
It's probably a drop cloth.
Drop cloth on the painting. And he moves it and he realizes there's a mirror. There's, you know, like a medicine mirror there in the bathroom. He's like, that's another window? So he goes.
Right. Because on the painting, when he removes the drop cloth from this corner of the painting that was covered up, it's a bathroom mirror and his son is in a reflection. So that's when he realized that the bathroom mirror is probably another doorway.
And so, yeah, he goes in. Now, in the movie, there are many times where he opens and closes the mirror. And if you realize the angle of where they put the camera when he opens it, it's almost as if something's going to come at him. Because that's normally how jump scares are when it comes to those types of mirrors. But I was like, I'm expecting something to happen. Nothing really happens. I'm like, I'm still expecting something. So then he's like, wait a minute. If me opening and closing this does nothing, what if I grab this chair or whatever he grabbed, and threw it at the mirror, and it's like right there, there's like nothing, there's nothing but a black space, and he's like, uh-huh, picks up another object, throws it in, and he's like, how? Looks out the window, feels on the wall, he's like, but there's no hole here, this is out of this world, yeah, this house is completely insane.
Right.
So then he's like, okay, I got an idea, I'm gonna grab my shotgun. I'm going to grab a long rope because even though I don't know how long this drop is, I'm going to grab a long enough rope. I don't care. Grabs a long enough rope, ties the gun to the rope, ties the rope to something in the bathroom that can sustain his weight as he goes down and, you know, use the rope as a, almost like an elevator system so he can slowly descend down. Now, as he's descending, there's this weird looking skull bat thing coming at him. Like, the first time it comes at him, he gets scared. The second time it comes at him, it takes the shotgun. Then it comes back again, shoots the rope, and he falls down into the water.
Right.
And as when he falls down, he swims forward, and he sees he hears his son. And then his son is, like, locked in this bamboo cage, so basically what they did in Vietnam.
Right.
He goes over there to get his son. His son's like, Dad, we have to hurry or still be back. Like, who is he? He doesn't really explain who C is, but, you know, all we should know that it is a monster, whatever, there. And they're getting shot at by this silhouette of a man or thing, whatever. So they swim away. And when they swim, they come out of the pool where his son first disappeared, which is what the auntie said, that the house took him.
Right.
And again, no one's going to believe the auntie because, you know, they're going to think that he's insane.
Right.
So as they come out of the pool, they hear, what was it? They do hear a knock at the door, so they go check on the door. And oh no, look, it's Ben back from the dead. And he's like, oh, hi, Roger. I'm here for revenge. So then he's like, he goes to his son. He tells him, I want you to go get out of the house, get some help. I'll distract him. The son does do that. Now, again, what's his name? Not Roger. What's the other one's name?
Harold?
Yeah, Harold is still in the house. Keep that in mind. He is still in the house. Now, I will bring this back up later on how this shouldn't even happen. Now, so as he goes around trying to fight Ben, he ends up going to the kitchen door. He pushes it open, and he ends up falling, you know, falling down, hanging on the edge of it. And then, you know, because since the house is weirdly haunted, going to a different plane of the world, he's just hanging there with a cliff of rocks and, you know, body of water. Ben comes over, step on one of his hands. He let, you know, that which causes him to let go of the edge a little bit. And before he falls, he's like, I'm not going to let this man have me drop to my death. So he takes his belt, ties it in a good knot.
No, I don't think he ties it in a knot. He just whips it off.
Well, he does something to it to make sure it can tie it around Ben's arm. Takes it off. Use the belt.
I think the intention was the belt was supposed to have whip-like action. Yeah. Now, like a whip wraps around when you hit somebody.
Yeah, it wraps around Ben's arm.
That's what he intended with the belt.
Yeah, it wraps around his arm. He pulls him down. Ben falls. He then pulls himself up, turns around, like, now it's a kitchen again. Ooh!
Right.
It's all in your head, Roger. It's all in your head. So then he's like, he hears his son calling him. So he goes to look for his son. He goes upstairs, goes to the one in the room. He sees Ben holding his son. And he's like, see now, Roger, there's only one way out of it. There's only one thing you can do is you have to kill yourself. That's the only thing you can do to make this stop. Because that's how I'm getting my revenge. Now, as Roger pulled his hands up to try to grab his son, his hand gets cut off. But then he looks down and he's like, my hand is here. And then that's when he's like, fear is how I'm losing. So if I'm not afraid of this man, then he cannot do anything to me. So he goes to grab his son and be like, you can't do anything to me because I'm not afraid of you. He then reaches towards Ben, grabs a grenade, pulls a pin, stucks it up Ben's rib cage, and then leaves the room. And that's when the explosion comes off. There's fire there. That's when his ex-wife actually does show up now. And then for somehow reason, Held is outside now. Come, I'm like, Held, when did you leave? I thought you was asleep in the house.
Right.
When did you get up and leave? Roger.
Right, doing all that.
Held, something, explain. That makes no sense. You was asleep. You was dead to the world. When did you get up and leave the house? And then, you know, come out of, apparently you came out of your house because that's your house is on the left-hand side of his. Where did you come from? Why?
Right.
You know, the ex-wife is happy because the son is back. And I'm pretty sure that's when he's like, oh my God, she was not crazy at all. She was telling the truth. Wow. I messed up. That was my fault for calling her crazy. My bad.
Right. But, you know, the son probably hadn't aged.
Oh yeah, the son did not age at all. Right. And I'm like, you know what? Because of how the poltergeist work, that is definitely how it works. When you go to the other world as a human being, you do not age. No matter how many time passes, you do not age. You don't get hungry. Nothing.
Right.
You're
right.
Perfectly fine.
Yeah, that's how it works. That's how it works, I believe. So I asked you what your favorite part was, and basically the entire second half of the movie was your favorite part.
And that part had to do with the poltergeist part. Yeah, that was the great parts.
Yeah, that was my favorite part too. That was like what you call it. That's why I love this movie so much, especially the second half. When he's dealing with the like when you was talking about the monster he was burying in the yard. I just got a kick out of that. And then it's like let me look this up real quick. I have recorded on SoundCloud. So what happened was, oh shoot, if the app would come up. I just want to see my history, son. Okay, so excuse me. So the song that was playing while he was burying that pieces of that monster is You're No Good by Betty Everett. And then after that, they played Dedicated to the One I Love by the Shirleys. So, excuse me. That's going to happen again. Is there something in my throat? So, when they play You're No Good and he was burning the body, I was like, that's a kick. That's a kick right there. I really love that part. So, let's move on to trivia. Because we're running long on this episode. So, trivia, once again, is provided by IMDb. So, Kane Hodder, who was a stunt coordinator for the film, is known to horror fans as the one who played icon Jason Voorhees more than anyone else. Four films total. Director Steve Miner also directed Friday the 13th, Part 2, 1981.
According to Fred Decker, the script was originally inspired by Twilight Zone, the movie that came out in 1983. After seeing that film, Decker and his friends, which included Ethan Wiley, Steve Miner, and Shade Black, planned to make their own independent
anthology
movie on video, but the project was never completed. Decker used the idea for his unproduced segment for this film.
Like several horror films in the 1970s, 80s, and early 90s, one of the major themes of this film is the mental trauma of the Vietnam War that is relived and dreamt of by its protagonist. And this can largely be attributed to the recognition of post-traumatic stress syndrome, PTSD, in 1980 by the American Psychiatric Association, and an increased popular understanding throughout those decades of PTSD syndromes, ergo nightmares, flashbacks, etc., as well as an increased number of Vietnam veterans who committed suicide as a result of their wartime experiences. Thus, in many ways, films like House reflect a change in a national consciousness as war ceased being depicted as a glorious event and began to be seen as a harrowing and traumatic experience.
Sean S. Cunningham, the producer, produced the Friday the 13th movies, and Harry Manfredini wrote the music for this and the Friday the 13th movies.
The original screenplay by Fred Decker was a traditional horror film with no humor at all. The comedy was added by Ethan Wiley when he rewrote the script, which is a bonus. Shouts out to Ethan Wiley. He vastly improved his film.
The next door neighbor, Harold, is played by George Wendt. Wendt, who best known for his role as Norm on Cheers that came out in 1982, House 2, The Second Story, that came out in 1987, featured an appearance by John
Ratzenberger,
who played Norm's best friend Cliff.
Yeah, so Norm, you know, I don't remember what Norm's occupation was. I want to say maybe he was a salesman or an office worker. I don't even know. But everybody remembers Cliff Ratzenberger's character was a mailman. And while Norm was like almost like the same character as this guy. What was his name again? The guy he played in this movie.
You talking about Harold?
Harold, yeah. He's almost like Harold. But Cliff Ratzenberger, he played a mailman and knew everything. It's like there's nothing that you could ask that he wouldn't know about.
Again, so House 2, I don't think that was needed. House 1 is fine.
Right. I think they went all the way to House 4, but the latter two movies just went straight to video. I don't even know if House 2 made it to theaters. But, you know, it made enough money, so it's like you make enough money, like, yeah, let's make another one. But, yeah, House 1 was enough for me as well. So, oh, shoot, something happened. Hold on a second. For some reason, my screen's flipped. For some reason, I don't know. Everything looks normal. Everything's normal. That's going on here. Anyways, I kept calling him Cliff Ratzenberger. His name is John Ratzenberger. Steve Miller leapt at the chance of making the film, as he was largely regarded as a director of horror films, having helmed the second and third Friday the 13th films. His next project after House, 1985, were Soul Man, in 1986, and the pilot of the episode of The Wonder Years, 1988.
In the Vietnam War flashback, you can clearly hear the sound of
a kookaburra.
A kookaburra bird. They are native to Australia and would definitely not be in Vietnam.
I was listening for the kookaburra, but then I realized I don't know what it sounds like, so it doesn't matter.
I think you heard it because you heard some type of bird in the film.
Yeah, yeah.
That was
probably it.
Yeah.
But you would have to be a bird watcher to know, for this trivia to be interesting to you. in our final piece of trivia, in Hong Kong, this was known as "Don't go into the haunted house after midnight."
I mean, that's basically every single haunted house you have to deal with. You don't want to really go into midnight, but then there are some haunted houses that don't follow those rules because they're ghosts and they don't have to listen.
Not even this movie followed that rule. It's like the house really didn't have like strong rules because things would happen in the daytime, like his son disappeared in the daytime. The creature that masqueraded as his ex-wife, that thing came out in the daytime. And, you know, just things would... The fish probably didn't start acting up at midnight. The big swordfish that was on his wall. You mentioned that he covered it up because no one wants to see a shotgun blast in a fish.
Because but, the fish looked at him, too.
Right. Yeah. The fish was still aware.
Yeah, because he looked at it. He was like, I feel like this swordfish is looking at me. Moves a little bit closer to the computer. The swordfish's eyes move, and he's like, yep, I knew it. And it starts to move around. I'm like,
right.
Uh-huh.
Right. The fish is constantly looking at him. So that is why he covered the fish up. As well as the shotgun blast. So critics, what do critics think? Critics on Rotten Tomatoes gave it 57. The audience thought it was 45. I think that's fair. It got a 44 on Metacritic. These are the correct scores. I was way younger when I watched this film. You know what? I still enjoyed it in this rewatching. It might not have aged well, but I think because of the nostalgia I have for this movie, I still enjoyed it. I knew it was a big risk ringing this movie up, but my brother Vernon was like, how about this movie? I was like, you know what? Why not this movie? Because I was thinking in the middle of researching this movie, I was like, maybe I should watch Broken Arrow instead because it's a much more action-oriented film. It's much more in the flavor of what we usually cover on this podcast. But it basically had the same critic scores as House. And I was like, but I love both these movies. So maybe there's something wrong with me. Anyway, So, Jason Maslin, he says...
You mean Janet?
Oh, my goodness gracious. It does say Janet. I can read Janet Maslin. She says, scares are not its strong suit, but it has a trim, bright look, and better performances than might be expected.
Which I can agree. The scares aren't really the whole point.
Right.
Even though it's listed as a horror film, it's listed as a horror comedy film, so you shouldn't really be expecting to be scared yourself.
It's about as scary as Ghostbusters. That's what it is. Nicholas Bell says, or wrote, silly and illogical, the film holds a certain nostalgic charm. You know what? I think that was a negative review, and he is absolutely correct.
I mean, if you're not into ghosts, then yeah, you see it as illogical, or as some things. But other things, you know, like,
I think,
you know.
What he meant by illogical, like when George appeared outside of his house.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah, that's illogical. That's just so nonsense.
He probably spotted a lot more things than that. Stacy Lehner, no, I'm sorry, I'm saying that all wrong too. Stacy Lane Wilson wrote, may a house fall on the director's sister. She really hated this movie.
Apparently. That's real straight up hate.
Ken Hank says, pleasantly goofy horror time killer. Yep, that is correct. So those are what the critics think. We told you what we thought. I would encourage you to go watch this movie. It's fun. It's a bunch of fun. It's a bunch of fun. And, if you're really just trying to relax and you stream, what do you call it? Binge every show that you possibly could. This would be a nice throwback to the 1980s to chill out, you know, have a cognac or whatever you guys drink. I don't drink. I'm not a drinker. So also, we made some, I did a couple of revisions to the website, put a couple of new designs on there. Check out our mask required designs, something cute for the pandemic. And you got anything else?
I just remember how Hell took the phone book that Roger had when he first came to the house, and I'm like, you guys are just a dirty little thief.
Yeah, but he had his heart in the right place. He stole Roger's phone book, his personal phone book, because you know, they didn't have cell phones back in those days. We had to actually write phone numbers down names and phone numbers in little books, and we called them phone books. And if you lost your phone books, then you lost basically half of your family and friends because you weren't going to memorize all those phone numbers. So he took his phone book so that he could call his wife because he thought, like, Roger was having some issues. He had some mental breakdown. He thought, like, when he called the police, he thought Roger was going to kill himself. You know, he heard the gunshots. So he thought that maybe his ex-wife can help. So that's why he stole the phone book.
Maybe.
But Roger, it's like I said, he does not understand what personal boundaries is. He has no respect for personal boundaries.
I mean, the only one I see that had personal boundaries was a female jogger that went by.
That was the same woman that was in his pool.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Wow. She has
horrible.
No boundaries whatsoever. Just jump. It's like she knows that it's not her house, that the aunt isn't living there anymore. You know, the new owner might not appreciate her just dipping into the pool, but there she is. So, yeah. As I said, check out this movie. Thank you for joining us at the Backlook Cinema Podcast. Once again, rate and review us, and have a great day.
Yes, have a good one.